name is Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Katie and I will be joined by Gregory Stockel, Gina Bennett, Brian Lynn, and Anna Mateo. First, a report on endangered sea turtles in Thailand. Then, a story about artificial intelligence and the U.S. Air Force. Gregory and Gina follow with this week's higher education report. Finally, we close the program with Anna and words and their stories. Now, here's Brian.
Scientists in Thailand have released a group of endangered sea turtles in an effort to save the wild population. A total of 11 baby leatherback sea turtles were recently released into the Indian Ocean from Thailand's vacation island of Phuket. The researchers are hoping the one-year-old turtles will get strong in the wild and return in 20 years to reproduce. The release follows an intense conservation effort in recent years that centered on improving long-time survival rates for the sea creatures. In 2018, scientists discovered that leatherback sea turtles had returned to lay eggs in southern Thailand. Some stronger members of that group successfully entered the ocean, but others died after hatching. So a program was launched to help the weak baby leatherbacks grow, said Pinsuk Suraswati. He is the Director General of Thailand's Department of Marine and Coastal Resources. Thailand is one of five countries, including Sri Lanka and Canada, that has been able to keep leatherback turtles in good health through their first year. Usually, a leatherback will lay eggs after 20 to 25 years. The baby sea turtles, released last month, have satellite devices attached to them to follow their progress. The release was part of an international effort by the nonprofit conservation organization Upwell Turtles. Pinsak told Reuters news agency that it is necessary for researchers to study the animal's travel path in order to understand where they are going. This helps the group know which measures to launch to protect the turtles' hatching process. Leatherback sea turtles are believed to have developed more than 150 million years ago. But the animals are now extremely endangered in the Pacific area. The World Wildlife Fund estimates the current population in the Pacific to be fewer than 2,300 adult females. While in the ocean, the turtles face dangers from fishing equipment, eating plastic waste, and coming in contact with poisonous substances. I'm happy to know whether our effort in nurturing the leatherback sea turtles for a year proves fruitful or not, said Harun Konghe. He is with Thailand's Phuket Marine Biological Center. If they survive, it answers everything about the conservation and population restoration of the leatherback sea turtles in the best way possible, Harun added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Two American Air Force fighter airplanes recently flew into the sky above California. The military planes were taking part in training, practicing a wartime maneuver called a dogfight. One of the planes had a human pilot inside. The other did not. It was operated by artificial intelligence, or AI, software. A human was in the airplane's other seat. The Air Force was demonstrating how far its AI piloting technology has come. The United States is competing to stay ahead of China on AI and its use in weapon systems. The focus on AI has led to public concern. People worry that future wars will be fought by machines that choose and strike targets without direct human intervention. The U.S. has said it would never send a pilotless fighter plane into war because of concerns that civilians could be harmed mistakenly. But it is unclear if other countries have the same policy. So the U.S. is working on AI piloting technology just in case. Admiral Christopher Grady is vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top U.S. military leadership group. When speaking about the use of AI in war, he said, "China's working on it as hard as we are." Here is a look at the U.S. history of machine learning and AI in the military. The military started putting computers in control of some systems in the 1960s and 1970s. The Aegis missile defense system was programmed by humans. They gave the system a set of if-then commands because the computer could detect incoming missiles faster than humans. The system could not learn. It could only carry out the rules. So it was not AI as we understand it today, said Christopher Berardi, an Air Force lieutenant colonel who is working with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, on AI development. AI took a step forward in 2012 when faster computer processors started to analyze information and write rules. Computer experts call that period the Big Bang for AI. The new data created by a computer is considered artificial intelligence. Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall was the human on board the F-16 fighter jet called Vista. The Vista jet is the most visible AI project, but the U.S. Department of Defense has hundreds in place. One project going on at MIT includes recordings of Air Force pilots speaking with people in air operations centers on the ground. Service members are training the AI systems to detect the most important conversations and separate them from mundane chatter. The Air Force is also working on an AI-powered navigation system that does not depend on satellites. The concern is that satellites could be targeted in war. So instead of using satellite navigation, the Air Force is working on a navigation system that uses the magnetic fields of the Earth. Colonel Gary Floyd is head of the Air Force MIT Artificial Intelligence Accelerator Program. He said magnetometers are so sensitive, they would pick up the signal from flashing lights on a C-17 airplane. Floyd called the work so far very, very impressive. "We think we may have added an arrow to the quiver in the things we can do should we end up operating in a GPS-denied environment, which we will," Floyd said. There are some limits to what AI can do, so there is always a human safety pilot on board. For example, AI cannot learn in mid-flight. It can only learn from the data it collects each time the plane is in the air. When the plane is back on the ground, the new information is loaded into a simulator, and the AI system learns and creates more flight rules. But unlike in the past, AI now learns fast. Today's computers have more power than ever before, and sometimes the AI system learns new ways to fly the planes. Sometimes it can beat human pilots in tests. But there are still guardrails. AI may learn a new way to fly a plane, but a human observer will prevent the computer from transferring the details on how to do an unsafe maneuver in the air. The Air Force said it hopes the system it is working on today can be used to create a fleet of 1,000 unpiloted airplanes. I'm Dan Friedel.
How long student protests over the war in Gaza can continue is in question with the removal of encampments, graduations, and summer break. The student protests came after the Israeli offensive in the Palestinian territory of Gaza. The offensive was to answer the Hamas attack on October 7th that killed some 1,200 people in southern Israel. The resulting war in Gaza has killed more than 35,000 people, including civilians and fighters. Those numbers come from Gaza's health ministry and are not independently confirmed. The protesters say they will continue until college officials meet their demands. They include a permanent ceasefire in Gaza and ending university investment in companies profiting from the war. They also include the removal of punishments for students and school employees for protesting. Experts who study protest movements say it is difficult to continue the protests' energy if most of the students are gone. But they also point out that student demonstrations are just one way to protest in the wider pro-Palestinian movement that has existed for many years. They say this summer will provide more chances for the energy that started at universities to move to the streets.
Dana Fisher is a professor at American University in Washington, D.C. She has written several books on social movements and has seen some of her students among protesters at the university. She noted the campus protests spread across the country as a response to police activity at Columbia University on April 18th. More than 100 people were arrested then. Since those first arrests, the Associated Press estimated that nearly 2,900 people have been arrested at 57 colleges and universities around the U.S. Fisher told Reuters news agency that she does not see enough organizational structure for the young people to continue protesting when they are not at school. She said the movement will have to evolve or it can't continue. In Denver, Colorado, police on April 26 arrested 45 people at an encampment protest at the Auraria campus used by the University of Colorado Denver, Metropolitan State University, and the Community College of Denver. On May 8th, the students returned for a sit-in inside the Aerospace and Engineering Sciences building. The building was developed in part with a $1 million gift from arms manufacturer Lockheed Martin. Steph, who chose to not give her last name due to fear of punishment, is a 21-year-old student on the Auroria campus. She said, "We're keeping our protests up and our encampment going until our demands are met, however long that takes." She added, "We'll be here through summer break and into next fall if needed." Fisher said the police response to protests has helped create a sense of activism in a new generation of students. She thinks the current campus demonstrations are the beginning of a long, hot summer of protest about many issues. And she thinks the Republican National Convention in July and the Democratic National Convention in August will become targets for large protests. Fisher said the current police response has been much more aggressive and repressive than the time of student-led protests against the Vietnam War in the 1960s. And then, in the middle of all that, the presidential election, she added.
Michael Heaney teaches politics at the University of Glasgow in Britain. His research and books have dealt with U.S. protest movements. Heaney said the campus protests are just one method in the wider movement to support Palestinians, an ongoing effort that goes back many years. He pointed to the U.S. civil rights protests that went back 200 years, saying just because one moment of protest ends does not mean the end of a movement. He said pro-Palestinian protests in American cities this summer could grow if Israel's offensive in Gaza continues. And he added that such demonstrations would have been supported by the widespread university activism. Jacob, 22, is one of the student protest organizers on Denver's Auraria campus. He said, "After graduation, it may be a ghost town on this campus, but we'll still be here." He added, "We're not going anywhere." I'm Gregory Stockel.
And I'm Gina Bennett.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On today's show, we talk about a strategy for winning or for completing a big task. That strategy is called dividing and conquering. With this strategy, you gain an advantage by creating divisions within a group. You might try to turn your enemies against each other. You try to keep control over a group of people by creating problems among them. You could also make a group of people disagree and fight with one another. When you do this, they will likely be too busy fighting each other to think about fighting you. For example, the police detectives tried to divide and conquer warring drug dealers. The drug dealers were so busy fighting each other, they made mistakes and got arrested by police. However, you must be careful when trying to divide and conquer. The people you are trying to divide may band together. This means they form an alliance. They overcome their differences, work together, and turn against you. Now, this expression is not just used when talking about defeating people. We can also divide and conquer when trying to complete a difficult task. If you want to complete a complex task, it is helpful to have several people working on it at the same time. You would divide the tasks and delegate them to others. That way, you can conquer or complete the task. Here's an example. Let's say you are working on a big project with some coworkers. The project is complex and has many moving parts. So instead of everyone working on the same things at once, you decide to divide and conquer. You assign each person a different task. In the end, the project gets done smoothly and on time. Now, let's hear some friends use this expression this way. They are preparing for a surprise birthday party and have lots to do.
Okay, change of plans. Samantha just texted. She canceled her work meeting and will be here in 2 hours, not four.
2 hours? That's not enough time. We'll never be ready for her surprise party. You need to stall her. But don't make her suspicious.
If I try to keep her away, she'll know something's up. She knows us too well.
You're right. What are we going to do?
First, calm down. What still needs to be done?
The food needs to be cooked. The cake and drinks need to be picked up. The living room needs to be decorated. And the gift needs to be wrapped. We'll never finish in time.
We will. We just need to divide and conquer. You keep cooking. I'll text Claudia and ask her to pick up the cake on the way over. Then I'll text Gwen. She can pick up the drinks. When Steve gets here, he can wrap the gift and decorate. He's good at those things.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Wait a minute. What will you be doing?
I'm busy. Dividing and conquering doesn't happen by itself.
And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. If you have a big goal, maybe it's time you divide and conquer it. Break it down into small tasks and get them done. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. Ana is here now to talk with us about this week's phrase, divide and conquer. Welcome, Ana.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Ana, how did you think of this week's phrase? I think our listeners remember that last week we talked about your notebooks with all your ideas, some good, some not so good. That was the wheat from the chaff.
So
did this week's story come out of one of those notebooks?
Well, for any new listeners, yes, we talked about my many notebooks, and one is just for ideas. And my idea this week did not come from my idea notebook. It came from a situation with my family. I have many brothers and sisters, and we ran into a situation where we all needed to do different tasks to accomplish something. And I thought, oh, we're going to take care of this task by dividing and conquering. And so I thought I would write a Words and Their Story about it.
Well, that seems like a good reason to divide and conquer if you have to get a lot of things done quickly. How did it turn out?
It turned out fine. Yep, we all worked together on that one goal, but we all did different things. So we definitely divided and conquered.
So let's talk about the word divide for a moment.
Sure.
What are some things that the word brings to mind for you?
Well, we use the word divide or division in several set word combinations. We call those collocations. In science, we have cell division. In math, we have long division. And for technology, and I guess you would call it sociology, we have something called the digital divide. This means some people have access to technology and its benefits, and others do not.
Yeah, those are all good examples, Anna. And I had another one that I thought of, which is the Great Divide or the Continental Divide. It's a vertical line of mountains that runs all the way from Alaska to South America in this part of the world. So water on one side of the Continental Divide flows into the Pacific Ocean, and water on the other side goes to the Atlantic. And a little piece of trivia, I recently crossed over the divide back in March when I was driving from Ohio to California. So we went from Texas all the way through New Mexico and wound up in Arizona. So we crossed this line. Have you ever done that, Anna?
I have. I have driven across country twice, once with a friend and once by myself. And yeah, I stopped at the Continental Divide, and tourists there often like to put one foot on the eastern side and one on the western side of the Continental Divide. It's very, very fun geographically.
That's a good image. That's a good image to remember. And our listeners probably can put that in their minds when they're thinking about the United States. So that's a fun scenic trip for sure. You gave an example in this week's story of a group of friends working together to pull off a big surprise. And the clock was ticking, so one friend suggested they all pick different tasks and do them separately. And then if they all finished on time, the friend who was coming to the party unaware there was going to be a party would get there and the surprise would be ready. It seems like it's a good strategy to divide and conquer.
Exactly. With the expression divide and conquer, a group of people are working on the same goal, but they focus on individual parts of that goal to get it done quicker. Now, in the story, we talk about how some people use it to divide people. Maybe a political party tries to divide people. So it can be used in a bad sense. The strategy can be used that way. But I wanted to use some examples of how we use it to accomplish a task, not just to divide people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like the Napoleonic style of divide and conquer, right?
Right. Napoleon, Machiavelli, and those war strategists. Yeah, it definitely is a strategy. So our listeners will hear it. I hope they know how to use it, but it can be used in a good sense, in a good way.
Well, talking about dividing and conquer, I think I'm going to tell my softball teammates about it. Like, everybody has to work together, but we can't work on the same thing exactly at the same time. So I think we can have this philosophy of working together, even though we're working separately. So I think that might help us get a win.
Yes, you need to band together, even if you are dividing and conquering.
That's right. Like, we need to conquer the other team with the same goal.
Correct. Correct.
Well, I'll let you know what happens next week, Anna. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast.
You're welcome, Dan. Good luck with your softball team.
Thanks, Anna. That's all the time we have for today's Learning English podcast. Thanks to all our VOA colleagues for their help on the program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.